Will you please pray with me? May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. First, God speaks. There's no relationship between God and Abram, whose name would later be changed to Abraham. There is nothing there until God speaks. It's God's initiative, God's intrusive word. First, God speaks a word of reassuring promise. Don't be afraid, Abram. I'm taking care of things. Your reward is going to be great. A great family through which all the nations of the earth shall be blessed shall come from you. Then Abram responds, expressing some concerns about the situation because he doesn't have children. And it just reminds me of that old joke, you know, little 8-year-old Billy going to his parents saying, "Where did I come from?" And they give this long lecture about the human reproductive cycle and had charts and graphs and PowerPoint presentations and then at the end he says, "Oh no, I know all about that stuff. Susie's from Cleveland. Where am I from?" That's what this feels like to me. Abram has to explain the birds and bees to God. And God responds with specific promise and reassurance about Abram's descendants. "Look towards the heavens. Count the stars if you can. So shall your descendants be." Now notice, God doesn't tell how this shall occur. What biological process shall be faced? What parts of Medicare cover maternity and what supplement and insurance he needs to get. But what God does do is paint a reassuring picture of a future with a family as numerous as the stars in the heavens. Consequently, Abram responds in belief, in righteous faith. This morning I'm here claiming that in this story we see a pattern. A pattern duplicated in dozens of similar cases throughout Scripture and billions upon billions of times throughout history. First, God calls, promising to us our lives for God's higher purposes. Next, the recipient of the call expresses some anxiety, some fear. "Who me? No, I can't." Then there's divine reassurance, "Don't be afraid." And finally, it's followed by faithful delivery of God's promise, "I will." It's a pattern. It's repeated. God calls, there's fear, reassurance, faithful delivery. There was Sarai. Her name hadn't yet been changed to Sarah. She was old as dirt, childless wife of Abram. How old was she? Too old to have a baby. She laughed out loud when God told her she would have one. Well, what would you have done in that situation? Sue the doctor that did your hysterectomy? She laughed. I would have laughed too. Abram may have had his doubts, but Sarai, she laughed her way from the geriatric ward to the maternity ward. And when her child was born, she named him Isaac, which of course means laughter. There was Moses hiding out in the land of Midian, who, after he had killed an Egyptian, Moses was keeping the sheep of his father-in-law. And the next thing you know, a bush burst forth into flame, and a voice came from the burning bush telling Moses that God was going to deliver the people. And Moses, God says, "Guess who I'm going to have do it?" Well, Moses protests. "I'm not good at speaking in front of people." He tells God that there's no way Pharaoh's going to listen to a nobody like him. You know the rest of that story. There was the voice that came to Jeremiah asking him to become a spokesperson for God, to tell Israel what God wanted them to do. Jeremiah protested, "Hey, I'm too young. I'm only a kid, you know." But Jeremiah was told that God would be with him, would help him, would give him what he needed for the task. And Jeremiah became a great prophet with God's help. There was a young woman, unmarried, living in a dusty town in a nowhere place named Nazareth. Suddenly she was visited by an angel God has heard the cry of the people. I've been sent to give you the good news. You're going to have a baby who will usher in God's love. How can this be? Mary wondered. Despite all her misgivings, confusion, and wild wondering, she stepped forward and said, "Here am I." Then there was Sue. I've changed her name. She was in midlife, out of nowhere, laid low by a rare and crippling disease. In less than a year, she went from a typically active woman to a paralyzed, bedridden person. She was a member of my congregation years ago. She could have sat around and felt sorry for herself. She had plenty of reasons, but instead she prayed that God would help her be useful. She serves that church by doing one of the few activities she can engage in: talking on the telephone. She can't run. She can't move around her house very easily, but she can use a telephone. And when someone is sick, they get a call from her. Then there's Scott Seckel. His story was written up in the Arizona Republic. He was living a relatively secluded life, and then one day he found a helium balloon, and the string of the balloon was caught on the bushes outside his apartment. A small piece of paper was tied to the end of the balloon string, and it had a note, and it was in a child's handwriting. The note said, quote, "Dios, quiero dos pares de zapatos y un pantalón." The Spanish spelling and grammar weren't perfect in the note, but the child must have figured that wasn't a problem for God, because the message basically said, "God, I'd like two pair of shoes and a pair of pants." The note haunted Scott for months, and he said, "There's no way I can find the child, who the child is, where the balloon came from. It's not like this kid wanted toys or the latest gadgets or anything like that. The kid was asking for clothes." Scott's response to such a request wasn't so unusual. He finally decided that, well, if an unknown child needs shoes and pants, then a person could bring children's clothes, say shoes and pants, to a place like a child crisis center. And those clothes would end up with a child he or she didn't know. Would it be unreasonable, Scott thought, for the child receiving the clothes to consider them a gift from God, and in prayer say, "Thank you for the shoes and the pants"? Then there's your story. What is God calling you to do and be in this world right now, right here? Is it something that seems physically impossible, like Abram? Does it seem so ridiculous you want to laugh, like Sarai? Or is it like Moses' call and seem improbable that anyone will listen? Like Jeremiah, is lack of experience the issue? Maybe what God is calling you to do takes great courage, something like Mary was called to do. Is God calling you to serve despite the problems brought on by failing health, like my friend Sue? Or maybe we're called to be like Scott and open our eyes and respond to the real pain that so many folks are living with these days: the pain of poverty, of hunger, of homelessness, of lack of adequate clothing, the deep pain asylum seekers are experiencing. God is calling each one of us to share God's unconditional love, justice, and extravagant welcome to a hurting world. I don't know exactly what God is calling each of you to do. I do know that God is calling you, calling me, as God has called us many times before. Martin Luther King Jr. would tell us there's a staircase in front of us, and sometimes we're not going to be able to see the next step. Nevertheless, we're called to take that step in faith. And finally, early in my ministry, I was serving a church in a large metropolitan area, and I was one of six clergy who would gather each week for Bible study, lunch, and to share a few laughs and support one another. I was in my late 20s. The rest of the group, well, they were old, or so I thought at the time. They were in their 50s and their 60s. They were old clergy. It was the early 1990s, and all of us served predominantly white churches. The local newspaper had run an article that week about the 20th anniversary of race riots in that community. The other clergy had all been in that area 20 years prior and remembered that time. Naively, I asked, So what'd you tell your congregation? What'd you do? And there was silence. And the silence seemed to go on for an eternity. It was eventually followed by some mumbling words and then a song and dance that skirted the questions. And I remember being dumbfounded as I sat there in silence, mouth literally opened in disbelief. Then one of the clergy quietly confessed, "I'll tell you what we did. We protected our jobs. We didn't speak up." That was followed by more silence. Then someone cracked a joke and the conversation shifted, never to be mentioned again. I hope and pray that one of the legacies that Pastor Jim and I leave you and this church is not protecting our jobs, but preaching the truth in love. And so we mention our three great loves, loving and protecting environment, like our fellowship time by using recyclable materials and items that decompose quicker, and loving and welcoming children, all of us, rainbow colors in the light, the LGBTQ community and everyone, and loving and helping our neighbors, those who are homeless, asylum seekers, and those who live across the street. With so many hurting people, I confess that it is hard to know where to turn to help out. I struggle with that myself. Our social justice team is giving some legs to that. I do know that this area has earned a nickname, City of Volunteers. I do know that when this church is mentioned in this community, it said, "That's the church with the rainbow flag. That's the church that helps people." And to do that, it's going to take time, talent, and yes, treasure. And I'm just here to say that Lent is a great time to discover our story, to develop our story, to seriously examine our calling for this time that we have left. And then, what happens? Well, with God's blessing, amazing things happen. Our assignment is simple. Look at what is needed to be done with our lives, and then go do it. Serving God is a journey for which there are no neon signs, no mileposts, except for the sure promises of God. That's all we're going to get. Thank God, like billions before us, it's all you and I truly need to live our story. Thanks be to God. Amen.
I will forever be grateful to have called Lynn Sylvester my pastor. To work with and learn from this very kind and very generous man of God. It was only a few short years ago when we met over coffee and discussed the possibilities of becoming a part of the Church of the Palms as music director, and then to begin a journey which would lead ultimately to the ordination within the United Church of Christ. I'm grateful to call Lynn Sylvester my friend and encourager. I'm sure you all know that Pastor Lynn has a tagline, a brand, an encouraging word that was and still can be heard coming from his lips in all sorts of circumstances. Go Red Sox! Now you know better than that. Onward! Which means going further rather than coming to an end or a stopping place. And I, as I reflect on the ministry that was, the ministry that is, and the ministry that will be here at the Palms, I know it is because of the particular gifts and ministry and leadership and faithfulness and unwavering commitment to sow the seeds of unconditional love that have spurred us onward. Thank you, Pastor Lynn, for your wise leadership and the inspiration to move onward.
Yes, that's great. What can I say about Lynn? Wow, I am blessed to call him friend. He is gifted in linguistics, he's well-read, he excels at teaching, plus, he has a great sense of humor. He has a caring heart, strong passion to help people, and he is tremendously humble because not only is he a Red Sox fan, he's a New England Patriot fan, and we couldn't stand to be around him if he wasn't humble. Let me share one brief story that tells you the kind of person he is. It's the story of our first interaction. It's a story I've told him before, but he doesn't remember it because he's old and his memory is kind of fading right now. No, I think he didn't remember it because it was a normal thing for him to do. He did it all the time. It just speaks to the kind of person he is, kind being the operative word. When I first came to this conference, I had been in the Christian Church Disciples of the Christ, not the UCC. And there were those in this conference who treated me as an outsider. And my very first whole conference activity, I walked into a church sanctuary where a meeting was to soon be held, feeling like an outsider. I was the second person to get there, and I sat off on the side, way in the back. There was one person who was seated up front. Later, I would find out it was Lynn. After a couple of minutes, Lynn turned around, and he noticed that I was there. So he got up and he went back to me and he introduced himself to me. And I said my name and the church I was serving. And he said, "Ah, yes, you're the new minister there. Don't you have a Disciples of Christ background?" And I thought, oh, great, here it comes. And then he shared three words. You said, "How wonderful. Welcome." To be validated and welcomed when you feel inadequate is a powerful thing. It's the gospel in a nutshell. It's what a gift that Lynn gave to me, and kindness is what Lynn is all about. Now, if you knew at the time I was a Dodger fan, his reaction might have been different. I tease, of course, but I do celebrate, Lynn, that I can call you friend. We have a very special guest here today. It is a gift to us and all of us. The Reverend Dr. Barb Dorr Peacock, representing the Southwest Conference, would like to say a word.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. I bring greetings, of course, from the other 45 churches in our Southwest Conference. And it's always a great time for me to be a Church of the Palms. This is a wonderful place, and And I just appreciate all the work that you do, and Jim and Paul are our wonderful colleagues, and so it's great to be here, especially on this Sunday when we get to honor Lynn and his special honoring as now Pastor Emeritus of this congregation. I've known Lynn, you know, I had to look it up, but oh my gosh, when you first came, 1998, so that was, what, 20 years ago, 21 years ago? Oh, that's when you came, oh, okay. Well, you were, all I know is you were hot off the Volvo auto car lot at that time, and he was talking up the importance of every clergy taking a sabbatical and selling cars. I wasn't quite sure about that, but but I've grown over the years to just value his wisdom and his friendship and his encouragement for so many years of ministry together. One time, a couple of times, I think he visited when Rich, my husband, and I served at South Mountain Church. He came for when he was on vacation. And he walked around the church, and he knew our struggles, small church, small urban declining church, and trying to find our way and trying to find our voice and what we should do in the future. And as he walked around, he told us, I think this should be an urban retreat center. And, you know, Rich and I were just, it was like, oh, that would be our heart of hearts. I mean, that would just be a wonderful thing. And so we started brainstorming, how could we possibly do that? And we talked to the church, and we just couldn't make it happen on the resources that we had. But lo and behold, when South Mountain closed, they sold their church building to a Catholic order of brothers, the Croziers, and they have since renovated it and brought residential housing to it. I think they're going to be adding on more residential housing for their order and also for retreatants. So, I mean, from God's ears to Len's mouth, I guess. And then I had some pretty agonizing difficulties during a previous tenure on conference staff when I was camp director. And he was moderator that year, wading through a lot of difficulties, and I just felt I had nowhere to turn except I knew that Len would be a listening ear. So he gave me that compassionate listening ear. I remember sitting in his office back there, really weeping at some of the turmoil that I was experiencing, and he offered that space, and he offered a steady hand to support me through that crisis and feel a sense that we were in this together, and I was grateful. Now I value his leadership incredibly. He's one of our conference boundary trainers, and he's a great partner in that. He's also leading boundary training for some of our clergy in retirement, and I'm very grateful for that. Some of you might know that my husband, Rich, who's here today also, has had a health crisis, and one time he was in the hospital, and I knew I had other things I had to do, and I said, can we have anybody come and visit you? And he said, I'd really like to see Len. So we called Len, and Len was there multiple times. So I'm not telling you anything you don't know, because I know all of you that were here during Len's time know of the gift that he is. So my prayers, my congratulations, my well wishes on behalf of myself and the entire conference are for you and Church of the Palms. Thank you.
We also have a very special guest and a special, I think you're going to have to look at your TVs for this, the TV screens for that. Go ahead and play that.
Hello, Church of the Palms. This is the Reverend Dr. John C. Dorhauer, General Minister and President of the United Church of Christ. And I bring you greetings in this year, 50th year of celebrating life as a church. Bring you greetings from the 5,000 churches across the life of the United Church of Christ and our almost 900,000 members. I also bring greetings this week as you celebrate bestowing the title of Pastor Emeritus on Len Sylvester. Well deserved. After all, nothing quite says I'm getting old like being conferred the title of Pastor Emeritus. and let's face it, Len's getting old. Help him remember that he's a Red Sox fan. He may forget that in his doddering, feeble old age. But it's also a way of saying to a pastor, you served us well, and we don't ever want to forget you. And for 19 years, Len served you very well. I have a special place in my heart for that Red Sox fan. He was, after all, the moderator when I came there. And so I am very grateful to you for doing this to him. Len, got a gift for you. Mimi and I are vacationing in Chicago, and I bought you some Garrett's popcorn. Now, I'm not going to be able to send it to you, so I'll just enjoy some of it here for you. And yeah, it's really good. You're going to enjoy that. So, to all of you at Church of the Palms, congratulations on 50 years. To Len Sylvester in particular, congratulations for the years that you served them well. And for the good work you did for me as the moderator when I was there in the Southwest Conference. Church bells are chiming, so it must be time to say goodbye to that great cardinal in the sky. Greetings to all of you. Great to see you. Many blessings on all of the years that will follow.
Reverend Len Sylvester, the Church of the Palms UCC would like to honor you today for the 17 years of service. You have been a distinguished leader and a faithful shepherd. Our congregation has grown because of your guidance. The life of our church is richer and fuller because we had you living and working among us. Len, would you please come forward? Congregation, would you please join me in the responsive reading? We, the members and friends of the Church of the Palms, cherish your ministry with us. We pledge to your continuing love as we journey onward. On behalf of the Palms, we hereby grant you the title of Pastor Emeritus. The conferring of this honor on you is a way of recognizing your distinguished service and also saying, we love you. You are indeed our beloved former pastor. The recognition carries with it no professional responsibilities, and nothing is to be required of you or expected of you by virtue of this honor. Rather, it is a visible and symbolic way of declaring to you, to the community, and the denomination this church's esteem and honor. We have a certificate that was prepared. I'm sure Lynn would be happy to share this with you. I'd like to invite Carol Reynolds to come forward.
Another ministry that you may not know about with Len, I just have a short message to give. Katie's Cart is a ministry which gives books to children and special needs and those in low-income families. It is her parents' way of honoring her dedication to kids, especially those with some sort of hurdle to overcome. There are Katie's Carts all over the United States, in England, France, Italy, Germany, and Croatia. She's the daughter of Pastor Len and Liz. Katie was born with an immune deficiency, which meant she was always catching everything and anything that came coming around. It seemed that she spent much time in pediatrician offices as much as she spent at home growing up. Her immune system was small but mighty until her kidneys got overwhelmed. Excuse me. Her body gave out when she was 26 years old in December of 2008. Len described Katie as Little Miss Feisty, saying she always kept her parents on their toes, and often as not, she kept them laughing. She was way over the extrovert scale, making friends left and right. She was open and affirming before we even knew what that was. Her friends included a bevy of a whole range of human types. If someone was an underdog in any way, they automatically had a champion in Katie. She attended the U of A, but her health kept interfering with her degree work. Academics were not her heavy start, her strong suit. She was much more interested in happening right now in real life. She sang in the Church of the Palms choir for 3 years in high school. She loved the theater, though she didn't get chosen for the lead parts. Costuming, makeup, lighting, anything that kept her in the theater, she was happy. In her late teens, she discovered a passion for a significant gift for making kids on the autism spectrum. She could relate with these children and kids like other people that couldn't connect. She was always in demand as a nanny. Children just loved her. She was fun and creative and funny too. As an adult, she sported pink, blue, and purple hair for a while. In honor of Katie's great love for children, Len and Liz, with the help of some friends, started Katie's Cart 10 years ago. Hundreds of books and toys of various locations were given out on her June birthday and at Christmas time. In the last year, Katie's Cart is focusing on books, reading, and literature. Books are currently in 32 locations around the United States, as well as the ones overseas mentioned. The books are in medical hospice facilities that deal with children. A young patient can take a book and keep it and hope that they will just fall in love with reading and it will become a passion. Pastor Len and Liz, in honor of you and your family and the support of Katie's Cart, the Service Project Craft Group of the Church of the Palms, that's supported by everybody in the Church of the Palms, we would like to present you with this check for $500.
As Jeff shared, the title of Pastor Emeritus carries with it no responsibilities except washing the current pastor's cars, working the rummage sale, and helping out with our Thanksgiving meal. That's all in the fine print. You'll read about it later, I'm sure. It's right there. Yeah, that's what it says. Jeff, I'm going to need your assistance. On behalf of the Church of the Palms, we are giving you one of our new 50th anniversary polo shirts, complete with the comma logo. It's that first one. There you go. Yeah, you can open it. Oh, yeah, you can open it and discover the wonderful national logo in Dodger blue close to your heart. Funny how that happens, isn't it? Yes. I mean, yeah, the palms close to your heart. That's what I mean, yes. We also have some gifts for Liz, who could not be here today, but Liz and I share a passion for flowers and taking pictures of flowers, so we have a plant for you to take to her, and also this gift right here. This is for Liz, but you may open it. You have my permission. You may not have it. Liz and Len provide the stuffing.
So this is all you want?
Get started now. We had so many last year. But the significance that Liz made in this community is tremendous. Providing a place for people to have a home on a special holiday when they didn't before. And without Liz, that wouldn't have happened. And so we celebrate her ministry. And then there's one last gift that Jeff will do.
Reverend Lynn, the Church of the Palms would also like to present you with the first rainbow logo service towel that was created by Judy Johndahl. Accompanying the towel is a handmade vessel created by a friend of the church. The bottom of the vessel has a flaw that represents the flaws that are within all of us. You must know that Pastor Paul and Pastor Jim wanted you to know that the vessel is still waterproof so that you can still wash their cars. Yes.